I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Knowledgeable.
Listen, here's what's wrong with your hypothesis, your theorem, your supposition, your postulate.
Honest.
If that front ain't in gangsta, your back end won't be able to show its full potential.
Understanding.
You're going to suck. You're going to suck for the next couple of years.
Passionate.
I'm all over social media. I live it.
This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hashtag facts.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
Reminder to everybody that tomorrow, January 26th, 2022, is officially the 30-year anniversary of the Super Bowl XXVI win over the Buffalo Bills. The last time Washington won a Super Bowl was 30 years ago tomorrow. On the show tomorrow so far, 8 a.m., Jeff Bostic, the starting center, will be on the show. Frank Herzog, who called all of those glory year games as part of the radio broadcast team in franchise history. Frank, Sonny, and Sam. Frank will be with us at 8:30, and we are still efforting to get another guest or two earlier in the show. Tomorrow's show will be dedicated, much of it, to remembering the Super Bowl season, which we've been doing all year long on Wednesdays, but tomorrow specifically, the Super Bowl win, the 37-24 win over Buffalo in Minneapolis, in the Metrodome. I was there. I was there with a woman who would eventually become my wife. We had quite the weekend in what was a frigid Twin Cities, but man, it was a fun Super Bowl for sure, and Washington won going away. The final score, really not necessarily indicative of the dominance. Buffalo scored twice late. It was 37-10 at one point. Washington, the dominant team. But tomorrow's show will honor and remember. We'll get a little bit nostalgic tomorrow on the 30-year anniversary date of the Super Bowl XXVI win. How close to the next one are we? It doesn't feel very close, does it? Certainly not after watching the playoff games over the weekend. Many of you reaching out after the show yesterday, some of you who tried to get in and get on the show to say nothing crystallized for you more the need for a franchise quarterback than this past weekend of football. And then, of course, Brendan, there are a few that will say nothing crystallized more the need to just build up a really good team around someone like Taylor Heineke more than San Francisco's win over Green Bay. It's an odd way to go after watching this weekend, a very strange way to go, but to each their own. I do understand and side with those of you, as I have and as most of you have for quite some time, the need to have that very good quarterback to have any legitimate chance. We can sit here every single time we have this conversation and go through all of the examples. And there are lots of examples and recent examples. Obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo would be one of those recent examples, being the quarterback and not a very good quarterback and not a top half of the league quarterback, I think most would agree. To be on a team that played for a Super Bowl and not only played for a Super Bowl, but had a 10-point lead in the second half of a Super Bowl. But to truly have a legitimate chance year in and year out over a sustained period of time, call it 5 years plus, you've got to have that position nailed down. You've got to have very good to great, or you're just never going to be and have the kind of consistency that you want to have as an organization. It is really amazing the way the league has changed. And thinking back to the 1991 Washington team, that was the third Super Bowl win with a third quarterback under Joe Gibbs. Joe Theismann being his first quarterback, and Joe Theismann of the three that was a Super Bowl winner here, I think we would all agree, was truly a franchise quarterback. Joe was the 1983 regular season MVP. Joe played at a very high level, really beginning in 1979. Didn't have a great 80, didn't have a great 81 in Gibbs' first years. They were still trying to figure it out. But 82, 83, 84, Joe, and really I would put the 79 season, he had four very high-level NFL seasons for the time. You know, statistically, those seasons you would look at in 2022 and say, oh my God, you wouldn't want Joe Theismann. But for the time and for the set of rules, Joe Theismann was a franchise quarterback. Joe Theismann was a top five to top 10 quarterback in the NFL. There was no debating that during those years. Of the three Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, he was the one. Because Doug Williams, while Doug Williams was a very good quarterback at times in Tampa before he came to Washington, but by the time he got to Washington, what Doug was he was a tremendous leader. Doug had a big, strong arm, which Gibbs loved. Doug was tough. He had, you know, without a doubt, that competitiveness, and he was really smart as a quarterback and could figure it out as much as any quarterback they had or anybody had during that era. But Doug was not at that point when he joined Washington a truly elite quarterback. He was not a top 10 quarterback in the game. Mark Rypien had some very good seasons, but Mark Rypien was not an elite or a franchise quarterback. He was not going to be the quarterback for a 10-year run where he was contending for Pro Bowls and All Pros and top 5 to top 10 status, even though his 1991 season was brilliant. Mark Rypien and Doug Williams had two things in common. They were both incredibly smart quarterbacks, and they could both really throw the deep ball. And Gibbs, with three different quarterbacks, won the Super Bowl. Really something that would be difficult to do in this era. That's for sure. It's never been done by the greatest of coaches, which is why many, me included, consider Joe, if not to be the greatest coach in NFL history, to certainly be in the conversation of the greatest coaches in NFL history. Lots of discussion certainly off of this weekend. We will circle back to that. I also want to come back to the overtime rule. Lots of discussion. Bill Barnwell, ESPN.com, wrote extensively about this. I did not know about the Kansas City Chiefs' recommendation changing the overtime rule. I gave it more thought. I've given it a lot of thought in the past. I'm not so sure that my opinion has changed in terms of being super passionate about it one way or the other. If it stayed the same, I'd be fine with it. But if it changed, I don't think I'd have much of a problem with it either. But to me, there's only one way to go with the change. We will get to that a little bit later on in the show. Also, Mike Jones from USA Today will join us at 8 a.m. Let's get to a What Do You Got?
All right.
What do you got?
Being the early morning, midday, afternoon drive, doesn't matter. Any sports talk show in town, being the one assigned with the responsibility to keep you updated on potential severe winter weather, there is a chance for a snowstorm on Friday and Saturday. The models are very much in disagreement. This time, the European model, overnight run, gave us a pretty nice size storm. Several inches in the immediate metro area, much more to the south and east of us, and then much more to the northeast of us. It's more of a track that would be a little bit more offshore than you'd like for the perfect track for the metro area, but it would get accumulating snow into the metro area on Friday night and Saturday. Now, for those far north, far west of us, you might be on the line of not getting that much, but it's way too early on Tuesday morning to have any sort of definitive forecast, and these models literally change and change almost 180 degrees at times from one six-hour run to the next. The Euro, the European model, one of the two biggies, the American model is the GFS, overnight moved this storm back in to the in the westerly direction, which puts us in the immediate metro area and areas east and south into the snow. Meantime, the American model isn't seeing it. It's seeing a storm stay offshore, keeping most of the precip away from the immediate metro area. I'll keep you posted on this. It's going to be cold. I mean, that's what we've had here in January. There are some signs of perhaps a what the weather people call a relaxation of the current sort of state that we are in, the current pattern we are in. There is a sign or two that for the first week of February, that would be mid to late next week, we could get a mild warm up into the 50s. There are signs of that, but there's no sign that any of that will be permanent. But it will be, nice today, but windy coming in and then turning very, very cold tonight. Highs tomorrow in the upper 20s to around 30. We've had a lot of that. Had a lot of those days in the upper 20s to around 30 with wind. No fun. I'll keep you up to date on this potential snowstorm on Friday night and Saturday. Right now, the timing of it could be sometime during the day on Friday and continuing into like Saturday morning. But one of the model runs had a very long storm. I don't personally see that with my forecasting skills. I see a faster moving storm on Friday night into maybe Saturday morning. And by the time we get to Saturday afternoon, it turning sunny. But maybe with several inches of snow on the ground. Perhaps. Or maybe nothing. What a business, weather forecasting. Here's my other what do you got. So the NFL team here in town, the Washington football team, has a PR department that when you are a part of the media, you're on a distribution list for a lot of their stuff. You know, we refer to the transcripts that they send out, you know, each week after the head coach's press conference or the quarterbacks or the coordinators. You know, and sometimes that audio is available, Brendan Wright, and sometimes it isn't. But we typically usually will get the transcripts. And then you get game notes the week before, and then you get game notes after. Well, yesterday, I was sent, along with everybody else in the media, a public relations email, which was the Washington football team's 2021-2022 season in review, which includes the season notes, which are now available, which can be reviewed right here. And so I don't know why I opened it up. It's not like I didn't live the season here on a day-to-day basis, but I wanted to see what this production included. Well, the first page is season in review, and it has several quick hit notes from the season. Then it's got a tail of the tape with the overall statistics, high-level statistics, and then it has the schedule and the results, and then it goes week by week through the entire season with each game's post-game notes. You know, this is a good thing to keep, I guess, for posterity's sake, but, you know, if you want to go back, if I wanted to go back and say, what was, you know, how many yards, I mean, you can do this all online, obviously, how many yards did Gibson have? When did that fumble in the Chargers actually happen? Because it is interesting that in the write-up of the Chargers game, there was no mention of the biggest play of the game, which was the Antonio Gibson fumble. There is a mention that Antonio Gibson carried 20 times for 90 yards, that Gibson also added three receptions for 18 yards, and that Gibson's 108 yards from scrimmage are the most by a Washington running back in week one since Adrian Peterson's 166 yards in 2018. It marked the fifth time in Gibson's career that he amassed 100-plus scrimmage yards. The last running back other than Gibson to tally more than 108 scrimmage yards in a single game was running back Darius Geis, who notched 137 scrimmage yards against Carolina in 2019. I would add parenthetically Ron Rivera's final game as Carolina's head coach. Lot of notes from the week one game against the Los Angeles Chargers, a 20-16 loss, about Antonio Gibson, but no mention, of course, of the crucial backbreaking inside his own 10-yard line fumble that gave the Chargers the 20-16 lead. I digress. I wanted to read from the quick hits, overall quick hits from the season. By the way, let me just say, this is the job of a PR department. It is to make and put a nice little bow on even a 7-10 season that highlights a lot of the positive, kind of avoids a lot of the negative. It is a marketing piece for you to remember all the great things that happened during the 2021 season and very little of the bad things that happened. The only bad things that are mentioned are the final scores of the games. They're rather important. So from the overall season in review quick hits, right, here are the bullet points about the 2021-2022 season. Washington finished the season 7-10 and missed the playoffs. Washington went 3-5 at home and finished 4-5 on the road. Washington won two division games, both against the New York Giants. It was the first time the club defeated the Giants twice in the same season since 2011. Woo! I didn't know that. I didn't know that that was the first time we swept the Giants in 11 years. Did you know that, Brendan?
I mean, it felt like 10 years, so yeah, that checks out.
It's true. It did feel like we hadn't beaten the Giants in forever. But if you recall, and they should have added this, and I could have helped them with this, the first time the club defeated the Giants twice in the same season since 2011, when Washington swept the team that would eventually go on to win the Super Bowl in 2011. Those are the kinds of things we don't usually miss out on talking about. Yeah, I know the Giants won the Super Bowl. I know they beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, but do you know who swept them? Do you know who was the last team to beat them? Here's the next bullet point. Washington won two primetime games, including a game on Thursday Night Football and a Monday Night Football matchup. It was the first time Washington has won two primetime games since 2017, when the team won two Monday Night Football matchups. So with that, I had to go back and check. I'm like, they won two Monday Night games with Kirk Cousins in 2017? I didn't think he won Monday Night games. He didn't win Monday Night games, did he? And so they had that one wrong. They didn't get that one right. Because in 2017, they played a Monday night against the Chiefs and lost. They put a Monday night game against the Eagles and lost. And they played a Thursday night game on Thanksgiving night against the Giants and actually did win that game. So that one was a bit of a mistake. They won two primetime games this year. That was not a mistake. You know, that's a good deal for them this year. They won against the Giants, and then they won against the Seahawks. But it was not the first time Washington's won two primetime games since 2017, when the team won two Monday Night Football matchups. That did not happen in 2017. Oops. In fact, if you want to find when they last won on Monday Night Football twice in the same year, you got to go back a long way, I think. Okay. The next bullet point. Washington finished the season with a 1,000-yard rusher. That was nice, Antonio Gibson. And a 1,000-yard receiver, Terry McLaurin, in the same season. That's the first time that's happened since 2014, when Alfred Morris and DeSean Jackson accomplished the feat. And then it just goes on and on and on with Terry McLaurin and Antonio Gibson highlights. because really they were the two most productive players on offense. And then it does mention that Taylor Heinicke passed for 3,419 yards and rushed for 313 yards and became just the third quarterback in franchise history with at least 3,000 passing yards and 300 rushing yards in the same season. Griffin did it, obviously, in the 2012 season, his rookie year, and Theismann did it in 84. Jonathan Allen led the team with a career-high 9 sacks. Kendall Fuller was one of 3 defensive backs with at least 75 tackles. And from week 9 on, safety Landon Collins ranked tied for 2nd among safeties with 2 sacks. He was also tied for 3rd with 2 interceptions during that span. Man, when you're highlighting a 7-10 season, you are reaching. But I did think about Landon Collins. And I did think, you know what? He's coming back. I think he's coming back. Now, in this long document, which wasn't completely accurate, and I'm not going to pick apart some of the other minor mistakes, but I did want to mention that they did not win 2 primetime games in 2017. Remember, Kirk Cousins could not win a primetime game to save his life when he was here. He did a couple of times, but for the most part, the team in general was struggling on Monday night. But I did want to come back with what I thought was a very interesting Taylor Heinicke statistic from the season. Then we will get to several other things, including Washington's final local television ratings numbers. Where did they rank amongst all 32 teams in the league? Just how disinterested was our fan base and our city in this football team? That's coming up shortly. We will get to the overtime rule. We'll get to quarterback talk and more. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 98.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
The team980.com. We are also on the Odyssey app.
Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Are you ready?
So this season-ending package, the season in review that Washington's public relations group sent out, included a lot of, you know, very positive rankings for various units, etc. I'm not going to get into those, although there was one that was rather surprising to me. They had something called grading out on defense, and these were numbers per Pro Football Focus, and they had an overall 2021-2022 defensive grade for Pro Football Focus. It wasn't a specific run defense or pass rush or pass pressure rate or coverage. It was an overall defensive grade. This is the way it was titled. I would assume that means this ranks the best defenses in the NFL. And they had Washington at 7th in the league, behind the Rams, Saints, Packers, 49ers, Buccaneers, and Cowboys. I didn't watch a top 10 defense this year. I can promise you that. Will you check, Brendan, on PFF to see where Washington's overall defensive grade ended? And I will check on Football Outsiders on their DVOA grade, because late in the season, I think before the final against the Giants, I think they were 27th defensively in DVOA in the league. But here was the thing that I wanted to mention about Taylor Heinicke. Heinicke became just one of 2 undrafted quarterbacks in NFL history to ever produce a season of 3,400-plus passing yards and 300-plus rushing yards, along with 20 passing touchdowns in a single season. Now, if you get the numbers to whatever you want them to be. You know, maybe with this, the 3,400, if we had gone to 3,500, there would have been another six quarterbacks that would have been in, or 3,300, there would have been another six quarterbacks that would have been in the mix as well, with many more rushing yards and more passing touchdowns. Who knows? But only Taylor Heinicke and Jeff Garcia in the history of the NFL are the only two undrafted quarterbacks to throw for more than 3,400 yards, rush for more than 300 yards, and throw for 20 or more touchdowns. Heinicke's 2021-2022 season, and Jeff Garcia, who was my comp for Heinicke the first time we really watched him, which was in the Tampa game in the playoffs. Jeff Garcia in the 2000-2001 season threw for 4,278 yards, 414 yards, rushed for, and threw for 31 touchdowns. There you go. Enough from that. Our good friend John Oren puts out for his magazine, Sports Business Journal. By the way, he does an excellent podcast as well with Andrew Marchand. But he put out the local TV ratings final numbers. He wrote, 21 of the NFL's 32 teams posted regular season increases this year over last year. Importantly, teams in two of the five biggest TV markets saw the biggest local TV ratings increases. Chargers games in LA were up 25% from last year, and Cowboys games in Dallas were up 23%. On the downside, two of the three biggest TV markets were down significantly. Giants games in the New York market and Bears games in the Chicago market both did were both down 14%. In Houston, the country's eighth biggest media market, ratings dropped 18%. So where was Washington in the regular season local television market ratings countdown of the 32 NFL teams? Washington was 25th out of 32 teams in local TV ratings. Now, they were among the they were the only team they were one of only three teams that won seven or more games to be in that level. Most of the teams, like the Jets, the Giants, the Texans, were really near the bottom of the league in wins. That obviously dictates local numbers to a certain degree. Also, LA and New York just are not big NFL television ratings markets. The Giants have been when they've won, but won big, but they've never reached the same numbers. Like this year, the top rated market in the country locally for television ratings was Buffalo. They averaged a local television rating of 47.2. Second on the list for the season was Kansas City. They did a 45.3 locally. The Packers did a 41.6, and the Saints did a 40.9. And then you have several teams that ended up in the 30s or around 30. The Cowboys, the Patriots in Boston. The Bengals were near a 30 rating. Baltimore was a 28 rating. You had Cleveland do a 35.2 rating. Pittsburgh did a 36.2 rating. Seattle did a 31.4. You know, the big-time NFL markets, which Washington used to be a part of, you know, do numbers and local television ratings in the 30s, you know, high 20s to, you know, somewhere in the 40s, which, you know, many years ago, that's where Washington used to be. That was the stratosphere in which they were in. They were in, you know, and we all know that media is consumed in lots of different ways, but this is the, these are the numbers I'm working with. These are the numbers that John Orand and Sports Business Journal put out. The local television ratings numbers. You know, even a market like a big-time football market, which Washington used to be compared to all the time, Denver, rabid fan base, a team that's pretty good year in and year out for many years. You know, Denver football fans, Colorado, you know, football fans are into the Broncos. You know, they did not have a great season. They were, you know, borderline in contention. They did a 25.9 local rating. By the way, almost everybody, You know, as John said, 21 of the 32 teams saw increases. I mean, last year during the COVID year with no fans, et cetera, football did fine, but football was not, you know, the top priority with everything that was going on. Washington's number locally here in the D.C. market was a 16.6. It was barely above last year's number of 16.5. 25th of 32 teams in local television ratings. As we know, dead last in attendance. The only teams worse in local television ratings were the Jets. They were the worst overall. The Giants, the Chargers, even though they did a significant increase, they're new to the market, obviously, in L.A., and they did an 8.5. The Rams didn't do well. L.A. just doesn't do well with big-time television ratings for their pro football teams. Remember, these two teams, you know, the Rams were there for a long period of time and then left for St. Louis for a long period of time before coming back. The Dolphins did an 11.8 in South Florida. Houston did a 12.3. They were terrible. And Atlanta, which is not a great sports town in general, did a 14.5. And then Washington came in at a 16.6. So 25th overall. There were only seven teams in the NFL with worse local television ratings. This is, you know, these are the things that really, really concern the team. They concern the league. They look at a market like Washington because out of all of these markets, Washington's the one that's really had big-time ratings. You know, you've got to go back now many, many years to find them. But as an example, the game against Seattle in the playoffs, which was 9 years ago, right? 9 years ago this month. It was 2013, January of 2013. That one game locally did a 50 rating locally. 50. The game against the Packers in the postseason following the 2015 season in January of 2016 did a 39 rating locally. If Washington, I do not have the number for the Tampa playoff game last year. I think it was in the 20s somewhere, if I recall. But the bottom line is you are really talking about a third of what the audience used to be during the regular season 10 years ago, and even, you know, less than a third of what it was 15 years ago that now watch Washington football team games. And, you know, it's not like they had a terrible season. They were 6-6 at one point. They had this round robin of heavyweight NFC East opponents in December. And, yeah, there were issues and COVID and the whole thing. But the Dallas game and the Philadelphia game that followed and the Dallas game after that on the night after a holiday and the Philadelphia game after that, you know, they had big-time opponents locally. By the way, Dallas twice in December. I don't have those specific game numbers. I'd like to see them, actually. But you're talking about, you know, a season that was not a complete and utter dumpster fire of a season. You know, it wasn't 3-13 or 3-14, you know, where that number would have been even lower. You're talking about a season that was halfway competitive, 500 heading into December, and they did a 16.6, and it was barely an increase over last year of just 1%. I'm sorry, not 1%, 1/10 of 1% was the increase over last year, a 16.6 to a 16.5. This is it, people. This is where it is. We live in a bubble here in this, you know, show that we do and the conversations that we have, the sports talk, the blog, the podcast, the beat reporters. I love the conversations. We all do. And it doesn't matter that it's a bubble, but it is a bubble. Most of the people that used to care about the team in this market do not care anymore. Two-thirds of this fan base has essentially been chased away with years of losing and years of incompetence and years of embarrassing behavior. And until they win, But as I've always said, win with some level of positive decorum, you're not going to get even come close to those numbers. Now, if you want to tell me that you've got a young fan base that is watching games, not on broadcast television, and it's not a true reflection of what the overall number is, well, you have to put that into play for every market. And the standing in terms of their position probably would not change. But if you want to tell me that, you know, two-thirds of what this team used to do, which was a 30-plus locally in television ratings for regular season games, half of what it used to be. You know, if they used to be in the 30s, you know, it's a third of what the highest number was for a playoff game. That's not an apples to apples. But essentially half of the fans that used to watch don't watch anymore. They do not watch anymore. And we know what's happened with LiveGate. All right, I want to get to this overtime discussion. Barnwell wrote significantly about it on ESPN.com yesterday. And I think that after further thought, I may have changed my mind on this. Yesterday, I was very much like, you know, stop whining. It's fine. It's not as big of a deal. I'm fine with the rule the way it is, as long as we don't go the college rule. But I thought about it a little bit more, and I think actually I'm in favor of a change. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app. BetMGM welcomes you with a special offer on the NBA. Simply place a $10 moneyline wager on any game. If either team hits a three-pointer, you'll win $200 in free bets regardless of your bet's outcome. Use my bonus code, KevinS200, when you make your first bet. Plus, you'll earn M-Life rewards that can be redeemed for rooms and dining at any MGM resort. BetMGM's proud to be an authorized gaming partner of the NBA. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com to use my bonus code, KevinS200, to win $200 in free bets if either team hits a three-pointer in the game you wager on. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. D.C. and Virginia only. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem. 1-800-522-4700.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hey, Coach, appreciate the time here. Kind of in the reaction to last night's game, a lot of fans wanted to see Josh Allen have the opportunity to touch the ball in overtime. Going back to 2019, you all obviously made a proposal. I'm curious, what were you aiming to change with the overtime rules in that proposal?
I don't know, but I'm glad we didn't change as of last night. But, you know, I had a chance to talk with Sean afterwards, and, you know, that's, I'm sure, something that they're going to look at it again too. And I wouldn't be opposed to it. I just, that's a hard thing. I mean, one team, it was great for us last night, but is it great for the game, which is the most important thing that we should all be looking out for. So, you know, it probably, you know, to make things equal, it probably needs to be able to hit both offenses, both defenses. So
it was Andy Reid following their incredible 42-36 overtime win in one of the greatest NFL playoff games of all time. You know, following the 2018 season on January 20th, 2019, they lost to New England in the AFC title game, 37-31 in overtime, when Tom Brady drove the Patriots on the opening drive of overtime to a touchdown and a win, knocking the Chiefs out. And the reference to the Chiefs proposing a rule after that season, the rule that they proposed, which was not adopted, but the Chiefs put forth a rule following that season where they would they wanted to amend the overtime rule to, one, allow both teams the opportunity to possess the ball at least once in overtime, even if the first team to possess the ball in overtime scores a touchdown. Two, they wanted to eliminate overtime for the preseason, which, by the way, I am totally in favor of. Who wouldn't be in favor of that? And three, they wanted to eliminate the overtime coin toss so that the winner of the initial coin toss to begin the game would actually be able to choose whether or not to kick or receive or which goal to defend. The thinking there, if you were to say whoever won the initial coin toss to start the game would also be the de facto winner of the coin toss, of a non-coin toss in overtime, is that that might play into some of your late game strategy if you're the team that didn't win the coin toss or if you were the team that did win the coin toss. But in fact, you would know. I don't necessarily like that at all. You know, there's a lot of stuff's been put out there in the last 24 hours. Louis Riddick, you know, from ESPN, wrote of the 163 overtime games under this rule that we currently have, that's regular season and playoffs. Only 35 of the 163 were decided by touchdowns on the first possession of overtime. That's 21.5%. And he puts four exclamation points after writing 21.5%. He said, "Don't tell me coin flips are deciding games in overtime. Strategy and execution does." Now, what he didn't tell you of those 163 overtime games, regular season and playoffs, is that where only 35 of the 163 were decided by touchdowns on the first possession of overtime, is that actually in the postseason there have been 11 overtime games, and the team that won the coin toss won 10 of them and lost once. The team that lost were the New Orleans Saints on Conference Championship Sunday a few years ago in that very controversial game where there was the egregious pass interference call that wasn't called against the Rams. The game went to overtime. The Saints won the coin toss but lost on a Greg Zuerlein 57-yard field goal, and the Rams went on to that Super Bowl where they lost to the Patriots 13-3. So, Riddick, you know, conveniently didn't mention that the overtime response in the playoffs has been a far different response. There just have been more situations in overtime where the team that won the coin toss won. Now, why would that be? It could be complete coincidence, but it also could be the fact that when you get into the postseason, you've got the best quarterbacks typically in the postseason, and you're not involving teams playing overtime games in the regular season that are terrible, you know, that tied at 17-17 or 13-13, you know, but you're talking about teams that are much better and much more capable, especially on offense, more times than not, as we saw. You know, the game Sunday, the truth is that in the moment, I did think that the coin toss was significant, didn't you? Didn't most of you think that in that game where the defenses were gassed at the end and we'd seen 25 points scored in less than 2 minutes, that the coin toss was rather critical, that the team that won it, that either Josh Allen or Pat Mahomes was going to take their team down the field and score a touchdown and win? It was, in that moment, it seemed as important as any in that particular game. And I also would say, as he clears his throat, I would also say that I think as much as any game we've ever watched, we didn't want to see just one team possess the football. So, there are lots of different possibilities, and Bill Barnwell writes extensively, as he always does, on ESPN.com about, you know, there will be and should be a long look at changing overtime rules in this offseason. You know, and he said some of the things that I think we all feel and that I just said, that nobody wanted that game to end on one possession. Everybody wanted to see Josh Allen get another chance. And, you know, a lot of the reaction has been, well, stop them, Buffalo. Well, you know, try to stop them, Buffalo. That's Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. just like try to stop them, Kansas City, had Buffalo won the coin toss with the way that game had gone. Here are the potential suggestions that Bill Barnwell's put out there that perhaps the league may consider. Because he seems to believe that the league is going to take a long look at changing the overtime rules this offseason off of that game Sunday. So he writes, first of all, deciding the first possession of overtime before the end of regulation, which was, by the way, part of the Chiefs' proposal. The NFL could choose to forego the overtime coin toss altogether and assign the opening possession of overtime to the team that wins the pregame coin toss or to the home team. All right, so that's one or the other. Either the team that wins the coin toss has the choice from the beginning of the game, or the home team gets it. By doing so, both teams will know who possesses the ball first in overtime before the game begins, and that could inform some of their late-game regulation decisions. I don't think this would have impacted Sunday's game, he writes, but it might encourage some teams that know they're not getting the ball to start overtime to go for two after scoring a late touchdown in regulation as opposed to kicking an extra point and heading into overtime. Yeah, it would not have been applicable on Sunday because you weren't, you didn't have teams tying the game or down seven scoring a touchdown with the option to go for two and the lead. You know, you went from 26-21 to 29-26 to 33-29 to 36-33 to 36-36. So it would not have actually impacted that particular game's strategy, late game strategy. That's option one. I am not interested in that option at all. Option number two, and let me just explain why. I don't want late game strategy to be determined based on home team or initial coin toss winner. I want football played like football is played. You know, I don't want gimmicks. I don't want, you know, certainly the college rule and especially the latest version of the college rule where after the second overtime they go to the two-point conversions. I mentioned it yesterday, but I think the Illinois-Penn State game was honestly one of the worst endings to a really good game and a major sporting event I have ever seen. I expect college will do away with that. I think like it was really cute to come up with that idea and it's for safety reasons, etc. But when they actually saw it through nine overtimes, they understood what a mockery of the game it was. I expect college to go back to just what it was before. You know, after the second overtime, you're then forced to go for two if you score a touchdown, but that possession starts at the 25. I hate that rule anyway. And the NFL, just so you know, has never considered and won't ever consider the college rule. For those of you that love it, it's the NFL. They understand we're not, you know, playing on a 25-yard field, you know, without, you know, special teams involved. We're playing football. We're not holding a three-point shooting contest to decide the game. Now, Barnwell writes, the second option the NFL may consider is playing out the full 15-minute overtime. He writes, there's no way the league would consider playing a full fifth quarter in the regular season out of player safety concerns. But doing so in the playoffs would give teams a chance to decide games in the closest comparable way to regulation football. This would be the best solution for fans, but I wonder whether players would be comfortable adding a significant amount of action to the postseason. Well, you know, to me, this makes a lot of sense, and I'll circle back to it in a moment, because I think this is the one that the NFL will consider. He then says that there's the possibility of playing to 8 points. He said, I like some combination of the 15-minute overtime and the idea of playing to a number. If we do first team to 8 points wins, we're making it exceedingly difficult but not impossible for a team to win on its opening drive. If the coin toss winner scores a touchdown, it could seal the game by converting a two-pointer. This would reduce the chances of a team winning on the opening possession of the game by 50%. If it fails, of course, the opposing team could win by scoring a touchdown and getting its own two-pointer. This could turn out to be a disaster if either team can score, though, and there would have to be some rule about ending the game with sudden death after the 15-minute overtime. And then lastly, Barnwell writes about a proposal called Spot and Choose. The Ravens apparently pitched this overtime rule in March, and it could be, Barnwell writes, the future of overtime. In this scenario, the overtime kickoff is eliminated, and one team gets to choose the yard line from which overtime will begin. The other team then gets to decide whether it will begin overtime on offense or defense. In this game, I don't think spot and choose would have been helpful because these two teams were so dominant on offense. It's possible that the Bills would have taken the ball at their own 1 yard line and trusted Allen to drive for a winning touchdown, something that isn't true for the vast majority of offenses and the vast majority of overtimes. There are never going to be perfect overtime rules for every single type of game, which is the reality of football. There was no good way for this classic to come to an end, but there probably were better ways than the way we saw. I think I kind of remember this Ravens spot and choose idea about overtime. I think maybe we discussed it over the summer at some point. You know, by the way, how would this work? Well, the team that wins the toss would get to choose the yard line or the ball. So, you know, in that game on Sunday, if you won the toss, you were going to take the ball. And then the other team was going to say 1 yard line. Anyway. I don't think that's a possibility. He seems to think it is. I don't. I'll tell you the one I like and why I've come around on the overtime rule in just the last 24 hours when we return. I want to know what you think, too. We'll open up phone lines at 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Our BetQL listener lines are open. What do you want the overtime situation to be? And really what we're talking about more than anything is the playoffs. That could be something that you think would be the same rule in the regular season, or you could do a regular season rule and a postseason rule. I'll give you my answer when we return. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.